We live in a world where the curtains covering the wizard have long since been pulled, where reality television and the incessant need to peer behind the scenes have, seemingly to most, become more entertaining than the actual performance or event itself. Well, once the observed crisis in question has been dealt with or averted, what always seems to make the cutting room floor is the resolve of the characters involved when they get on with their lives and move forward. It's too slow a pace for reality television to keep up with, but that's when shit really does get real. When I hear of a fellow musician making a break, boldly striking out on their own, taking left turns with no net, or even getting off the road, I'm very, very interested to see what they will do. I'm envious of their strength of purpose, and of course, if I admire and or respect them, excited for them and curious to find out where they land. Maybe I'm a bit biased because all I know about is being in a band, but when it's your job, not your hobby, you find out very quickly that it's a course few ever experience. People may think they understand what it's like to be in a band because they watch VH1's Behind the Music or they read The Dirt by Motley Crue, but until you actually hit the road for an extended period of time, you have no idea what it's like or what it takes to be in a real working band. And this is why there's a true camaraderie amongst bands who have been around the block, an unspoken understanding and a mutual respect, because only we know the sacrifice and tenacity it takes to do this year in and year out. I know you can probably say that about other occupations, but I can't name you another job off the top of my head where each day starts from zero, where you don't know where you're going to shit, where you're going to eat, or where you're going to lay your head down to sleep day to day, week to week, month to month, and that bleeds into years. Add on the dysfunction, temptations, and time away from home, and it becomes a cocktail that can be too hard to ingest for very long. Just this past week, while we were out on the Rockstar Uproar Festival tour, I was able to meet up with Doc Coyle, lead guitarist for the metal band God Forbid, when the tour hit New Jersey. Doc had reached out to me via Twitter a few months ago asking if I'd participate in a project he was working on. And since I was a God Forbid fan, had a few of their albums, I was flattered that he asked me, but more surprised that he even knew of our band. Sometimes, people in metal don't have a relationship with rock and roll. I can see how people who like rock and roll can't make that extra step into the world of metal, since it can be a marked degree harsher, but metal people should be able to relate to rock and roll. I see the music as a gateway to the world of metal, but sadly it's not always seen as the case. Doc, however, is not one of those people. As you'll hear, his relationship with music in general is quite similar to mine. And it means I can hang out with a guy for a long time. Anyways, the night before we were scheduled to do the podcast, while trying to figure out our individual time schedules, Doc dropped a bomb on me and said he had just quit God Forbid that day. What I thought we'd be discussing, Doc's great blog, which can be read at doccoyle.net, our mutual love of metal and rock, our backgrounds and relationships with hard music, and God Forbid's future plans suddenly took a 90-degree right turn. I don't really use this podcast as a current news source, but since this was happening to him as we were meeting up, I decided to get this episode up for all to hear as soon as possible. I knew I was catching Doc at a pivotal point in his life, at the precipice of a new project, and very grateful that he was so willing to share this with me on the podcast. God Forbid is a band that I got into back in 2004 with their Gone Forever record. Not sure if Doc even knows this, but we actually played a show together in 2005, something I wanted to bring up for the podcast but slipped my mind due to the heaviness of the unfolding events discussed. It was for WAAF in Boston and their Loca Bazooka Festival, which featured Clutch, Dropkick Murphys, Blood Simple, Life of Agony, and Disturbed. But when I found out God Forbid were on the bill, too, I made my way to their stage, watched their show from the back of the space, the only set I watched that day. Whether you're familiar with the band or not, we can all relate to these moments that we reach in our own lives. If you are currently in a similar situation, I hope this conversation with Doc inspires, hearing someone handle his personal crossroads with class and control. I'm excited for the new ventures that await him. Trying to do podcasts when you're about to go do your own set can be a little daunting and nerve-wracking, especially when you meet up with someone like Doc, who, for me, I can hang with for hours just shooting the shit. Add on the fact that there's noisy rock playing everywhere all around you, and we had to cut the podcast short and even interrupt it midway since the PA from one of the stages was just too loud to talk over. A huge thank you to Blue Mic Microphones and their Yeti microphones. A huge thank you to Skull Candy Headphones. Thank you to all the comments on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please keep them coming. It makes us look good. And Doc Coyle is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. All right, so we're here. We're on the bus. This is our fourth show in on the Uproar Festival, and I got with me here. It's the first time we've met, but like you said, it's like we've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're in a lot of ways we're kind of like kindred spirits. We're kind of these Renaissance men in our heads. I guess think in the multitude, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, you reached out to me on Twitter, and I'm a fan of God Forbid, as you know.
Well, I didn't know at the time, though.
At the time, you didn't know, but since then, I told you, and I was surprised that you were reaching out to me for another side project.
Yeah, I had some time at the beginning of the year, because God Forbid it just got off the road, and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, so I kind of just put the feelers out there about doing, like, a solo record, kind of in the vein of, like, Slash in Santana, where, like, you know, I write the songs and then get, like, you know, some of my favorite singers. I don't know. It's just it didn't happen at that time. I'll still probably do it. It's just a matter of when.
You know? Yeah, and I was surprised you were on Twitter and you knew of our band, and I immediately said, yeah, like, when? My schedule is really busy right now, but when? And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, I like that. I had some really, some pretty great guys that were interested, you know. It was like Jamie from Hatebreed and David Vincent from Morbid Angel and Jesse from Killswitch and
Vincent's the man. Yeah, Jamie's the man.
He's so cool. I met him like last year, and that's when he left Morbid Angel, I was like, yeah, I'm done with you, Morbid Angel. I'll see you next week. And then, you know, so I couldn't believe how cool he was, actually.
And neither can I, actually. We met him through Jen, his wife Jen, yeah, from Jenna Tortures. She came to one of our shows a few years ago, and then she put him on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy, this is nuts. I would never have made the connection. But then when you meet the guy, he's just full-on hard rock fan, too, and through.
Well, he's definitely, I think, you know, that thing where you're in an extreme band, you kind of get out of that world, and you know, then the Jenna Torches is in a whole other goth kind of, you know, S&M, I don't even know what subculture to really call it. But, you know, he's definitely not a tough and gruff, you know, grimacing death metal guy. You know what I'm saying?
I think a lot of people don't realize that, too. You know, they think he's all, like, cold and depressing and everything, but he's actually, you know, he'll talk your ears off about Alice Cooper and Kiss, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it's nice. I like it when there's more metal guys who are into rock and roll than there are rock and roll guys into metal, and mm-hmm. I feel like I'm in the rock and roll world, and I love metal, but I also find a kinship when I meet metal guys like yourself who have an equal reverence for rock and roll.
Well, It's weird because I really got into metal and rock at the same time, you know, but maybe it's just something about being a teenager when you got all that you know, kind of blood and, you know, that thunder in your belly, and you just
frustrated,
yeah, you just you know, it just kind of hit me a little harder. So it was like I kind of came up during like the grunge era, mm-hmm. and loved all and still love all that stuff, but then it was like Metallica and Megadeth and Pantera, I probably had like that 3 or 4 year period that a lot of metalheads go through where you stop listening to your rock records and you just get into the extreme stuff. And then I kind of, you know, and then I had, you know, maybe after I was like 21, 22, I kind of backlash and kind of rediscovered everything. Then really got into classic rock. Listen to bands that I didn't even listen to as a kid. And then kind of like, you know, I'm really into music history. You know, I need to know, all right, so you were influenced by this band and you were influenced by that. I want to find out about that stuff. And I was lucky, me and my brother, we hung out with a lot of older guys who, like, a friend of ours, his name is Attila, we would go over his house and play video games. He was like 21 and we were like 14. And he gave us his entire tape collection because that's when CDs were coming out.
It's always good.
So he was like, I'm getting rid of these. And it was like the history of thrash metal, basically in one fell swoop. So I'm like devouring Creator and Exodus and Testament and like, and you, every album. So you get it kind of just like, you know, objectively, you know.
You don't have like a reviewer going, this is good, this is bad. You just have these cassettes in front of you.
Or what I call like biographic bias, where basically most people like the record of the band that they first heard. When they hear it when they're a kid, they have a sentimental value attached to it. And it's like I say the Metallica argument. I got into Metallica on the Black Album, but I didn't even get that Black Album first. I got Ride the Lightning and then Injustice for All first. And then my buddy down the block, he had Master Puppets in the Black Album. So we'd be like share albums. So I got to hear everything at the same time. So I can look at it objectively.
Right.
You heard Ride the Lightning the week it came out, and that's when you were 16. So you have a certain attachment to it.
It's kind of like I use that argument as well on the Megadeth's the early Megadeth stuff. Even though I didn't get it that everybody was into Rust in Peace more than Peace Sells, because I got into Megadeth on Peace Sells, and I was like, wow, he did it. He upstaged Metallica. I swear to God, it's one of my favorite metal albums of like top five, top ten. And everybody was going off on Rust in Peace. And I loved Rust in Peace, but I'm like, look, you guys are, you know, vaunting this more than Peace Sells. I've had arguments with people about
I still got it. It's funny. You're in the Adler camp, Chris and Will Adler from Lamb of God. We've had this. Like, I'm a Rust in Peace guy. You know, and they're like, peace. I mean, like, drunken, bitter arguments, because we would like share a tour bus and just, you know, just go at it, you know. And but I love those debates. Me, I think So Far So Good So What is like the underrated classic in there. Actually, and I'll say Euthanasia is probably the most underrated Megadeth album.
Huh.
You know,
okay.
Because it's maybe their most commercial record, maybe besides Risk, but it's so good.
What's the gray one with the
Risk? Oh no, that's Cryptic Writings. I'm sorry, I'm getting confused.
Risk is the most commercial.
I never really listened to it, to be honest. I heard the single and I wasn't into it. But I think Cryptic Writings is great. I think Euthanasia is great. I think that's vocally the best he ever sounded. You know, he's kind of stopped doing the Mustaine voice. He just sang. You know, and he sounded, and the melodies were really well crafted, and I love the production. You know,
I'm not going to name the band, but I was hanging out at Gigantor like a few years ago, and we were watching Megadeth, and he goes, "Oh, they're so amazing." I was like, "Yeah, they're so amazing." He goes, "But you know, you don't really get into Megadeth for the vocals." I go, "Yeah, no." But yep. You know, I I think Mustaine would love to hear that.
Yeah,
you don't hear a lot of people going off about his vocals that much and discussing it. And over the years, I mean, if I was to get into Megadeth now, I'd be like, dude, I can't get over this guy's vocals, but I'm so used to it.
It's a love or hate it, man. You know what? Here's the thing about vocals. The best thing, if you're a vocalist, the best thing you could be is just have your own thing that when you hear it, you know who it is. You don't have to be the greatest singer technically in the world.
But
as long as you have a character that people know, oh, that's that guy, or that's the guy from that band, and it gives it a distinct... You know, I think that's the best thing, and that's the hardest thing to do. Where, you know, I think it's funny, like, you know, the post grunge thing. You had everyone doing, you had all that, and then it's like you have the emo voice where it's like when all guys kind of adding that to their voice. So, you know, I think character is definitely the most important thing. You know.
Well, so we were going back and forth last couple of days trying to hook this thing up, because the Uproar Festival schedule is like one after the other. Yeah. Bam, bam, bam. And I had to get you in here because where the bus is parked is ass up against the stage's ass. We're right up against the stage's ass. So eventually there's going to be a band on here in a few minutes, and hopefully we can be audible. So I want to get into this now.
We'll see. We'll just talk close.
I was like, yeah, you know, I'll meet you at 1:45, 2:30. Oh, can you do it earlier? Blah, blah, blah. And then you go, oh, by the way, I left, God forbid, today. So I'm catching you at a crossroads.
Yeah.
And I usually tape these podcasts in advance so I could get some air to breathe, but I'm gonna push this one through right away.
Okay.
Because
this is the first time I'll be talking
now.
About it, by the way.
Okay.
Because I quit like a week before it was public.
Right. You went public yesterday.
Yeah. But in a way, the crossroads kind of have already happened. Like, the band has basically been inactive for 6 months. And, you know, my whole thing is I don't want to, like, drag anyone through the mud. Like, I love all the dudes in my band. I'm not mad at anyone. But with that said, it was still dysfunctional enough where I wanted the band to be active and do things and be proactive. And it was certain elements of the band made it impossible to do that with any amount of, you know, professional manner, you know, which, you know, is, I'm just, my whole thing, you know, it's like, I love this stuff. It's art. It's what I love. But at the same time, I think the time and effort, I'm sure you can relate to this, the time and effort you put in to stuff, you know, I'm just passionate. I'm 100%. So it's like, if I, you know, it's like this, like, I make a schedule with you. It's like, hey, let's do it here. Let's just be considerate of each other's time and efforts. And that I didn't feel was really being paid to me. Especially me being kind of at the forefront of the operations, you know, in a lot of respects. And it just became unmanageable. So instead of trying to fight over things, I decided to remove myself from the equation and just kind of work with my circle of control, you know, which was, I have other things going on, a more rock-oriented project that I've been trying to get off the ground. But that's not why I quit. Like, I think you can, you don't have to, like, end one thing and do something else. I think you can kind of survive on multiple planes. But yeah, it was just time. Like, I knew it. You know, I just knew it. But it's a tough move to make, you know what I'm saying? It's more, like I said, it's more for everyone else. Like, then in that, I mean, like I said, the band has been inactive. So it's not like my life is going to change from today to tomorrow, but the perception will change, you know, in terms of how people regard me as being that guy from that band. Or
you saying that you are the forefront of the operation, now that you've removed yourself, is there a band?
Well, so actually, I sent my statement to the band and our manager as a courtesy before I released it, and then my drummer just on his own accord said the band put it on his Facebook that God forbid is over. So I don't know if that was they talked to each other, or if they individually he just went out and said on his own. So I guess the band is done, but not because I made it over. I quit the band on my own accord. So yeah, I guess so. You know, it's kind of a weird thing. But I didn't, you know, if they wanted to carry on and do something, I was not in the way of that.
You know? I read your blog that you posted with the announcement, your blog entry, and I don't know how sensitive this is or if you want to even discuss it, but you said that, you know, this kind of stems all the way back to 2009 when your brother left the band.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard, you know, all kinds of stuff about, you know, the ending and everything, and he wasn't ever present on your interviews to defend himself, and it was mm-hmm. mainly just like both sides.
Well, he did almost the exact opposite of me. Like, he quit the band in like a fury,
right,
while we were getting ready to leave for a tour, and then he kind of extracted himself from the entire scene.
It reminded me of the Sepultura brothers,
yeah.
The Cavalera brothers, when brothers split. And I know it's a very sensitive issue. It's a big deal for you. But does your leaving have anything to do with that? Did it start from that? Was there a different?
I was, you know, I don't know how well I articulated it, but I thought that we were going to do this forever. Like, I literally graduated high school, took a few months off, went to college for a couple months, and then basically worked a job for like 6 months, and the band got signed, and then we're on tour. So like, wow. I didn't know anything else.
Right.
And I didn't have any plan. Like, I wasn't like this kid in high school. I was like, I'm going to be an architect. You know, like, I didn't have, the low end.
Okay, it's just me here back at HQ. At this point in the podcast, we had to stop because the band you on stage, that is, started their set basically sending the WAV files that were on my computer to 11. And instead of shouting through their set and trying to get this podcast as one cohesive, uninterrupted block, we decided to stop and chill for a while. But once they were done, we resumed our talk, and here's part two.
All right, we had to stop because, like I said, our bus is parked right on the ass of the stage. Of all days, it wasn't like that yesterday. It wasn't like that for the last couple of days. But of course, when I got Doc here, we've scheduled an interview the day before that happened. So we were in the middle of talking about, you know, in 2009 when your brother left, God forbid, and you know, all well. I'll let you handle that.
Yeah, well, no. I was just saying, so I never thought about leaving the band. You know, I just thought that's what we were going to do. We're going to be rock stars. That's, you know. And, you know, I really saw the potential that was very, very high. And then when, you know, but I was still a realist. I was like, you know, if the band starts not working out or people don't give a shit, you know, then I never want to be part of a sinking ship, you know what I'm saying? Like, or I never want to be desperate about this. Like, you know, if it's not working out, that's cool. You know, you have to be okay with that. And then when he left, I was so pissed. Like, I was so angry that I was like, fuck him. You know what I'm saying? We don't need him. And then we just, you know, and we had these massive tours lined up. We had a tour at Lamb of God. We had the only real European festival run that we ever did. And we had the Mayhem Fest all in a row. And he left like right at the beginning of that. So we had all that lined up. And I was just consumed with, you know, just taking care of business, you know. And then at the end of that, and I came home and my girlfriend broke up with me. It the whole thing just kind of like fell on me. It was like, I got no girl, I got no brother, I got, you know, and the band was, you know, I just didn't know, you know, our deal with Century Media was pretty much ending, we didn't have a manager, and I didn't know if I wanted to do anymore, and I was like in this deep funk, and I started thinking about, you know, do I even want to do, all I wanted to do was, at that point, was to get my girlfriend back, because I was like, I just need something to latch on to, I think, but I just really tried to think about what I wanted to do, and what made me happy, you know what I'm saying? And that took that's been like a few year journey, you know, trying to figure out exactly what I want to do with my life and should I just get a job? Should I, like, you know, because I know so many guys who have been in bands and they leave the band or the band breaks up and they're, next time I see them, they're in fucking khakis and, right. You know, and they cut their hair and, you know, and, you know, there's definitely part of me that's sad about that, but then I know a lot of those guys are a lot happier than they were in a band, you know.
That's so true.
They can pay their bills, they, you know, maybe that they've started a family.
It's just not sexy enough for TV to see that, but it's true.
No, there's so many people I know who are much happier, because I think the touring life is a pretty dysfunctional life to maintain, especially when you do it for super long periods of time. Anything past a month, I think you kind of start going crazy. And it can lend itself to a lot of bad habits. And I think that can be, and some people can, there's varying degrees of people who can handle that, you know. You seem really kind of mellow. Like you said, you don't really drink.
No, not really.
That probably helps.
Yeah, it does. It saves a lot of drama, unneeded drama. But, you know, we've been on the receiving end of that. And if there's, you know, we've witnessed what happens when you know, kind of fall prey to drugs and alcohol by other people just being around them. Now we've the crew that we have with us now, everybody's like, it's just a nice, we all know we got to work, but everybody treats everyone with respect and everyone's cool with each other. It's a great vibe, man.
It's awesome.
Last night I didn't join in, but they're playing Gin Rummy outside the bus. They put out a table and everyone's just drinking and playing Gin Rummy. It's super chill and listening to Alice in Chains on the main stage. So
that's
the vibe of the tour.
Right on.
So yeah.
Right on. Well, that's good. See, you guys got your head on straight, you know?
It's interesting how just one, all it takes, even in a party of 6, 7, or 8, one person with some kind of, you know, problem or impairment can really fuck up the vibe big time. And we've been on the road, you and I have been on the road long enough to know that, but a lot of people don't realize that, you know. They think it's all the sex and drugs come with a price, and people don't ever witness the price that's paid.
I always think, you know, I'm a Libra, I guess, so my whole thing is balance, you know, like, have fun, you know, do your thing, but as long as you can kind of take care of business, you know.
I'm a Leo, so we actually get along astrologically.
My brother's a Leo, so there you go.
Okay. Now, okay, that this great segue, which is my next question. Are you on how's your relationship with your brother now?
All right, so after when he left the band, I didn't speak to my brother for 4 months. You know, definitely the first time in my life that happened. And didn't see him for about 7 months. And then basically, like, he had a situation where he got married and I heard his wife kicked him out of the house and like broke his guitars and his computers, and I just felt like that was horrible. So I, you know, like, called him when I was on Mayhem Festival, and we've hung out, we've steadily been in touch since then. Like, we're still brothers, you know. I don't know if it'll ever be the same. I think we've also just grown into different people with different interests in a lot of ways. But it's like this stuff with the band and, you know, ending. He's like, you know, sending me messages yesterday, you know, supporting me and stuff. So but, you know, I've kind of, yeah, it's like there was, I think, a codependent relationship with my brother and I, and that led to a lot of arrested development, you know, and kind of having that crutch, you know, emotional crutch of like just having your other, you know, he was my other half in a lot of ways, and, you know, but so last few years I've almost been kind of developing my own identity, you know, and right.
And like you said, you've been doing this since you were 16.
Yeah, that's, so
that's crazy. That's wild.
But kind of going with the flow, you know, maybe in a lot of ways he was the leader in a lot of ways in terms of, you know, kind of getting the ball rolling. You know, and now it's, you know, I had to like kind of figure out things for my own, and it's really new and, you know, scary, but, you know, I'm cool with that. You know, like, I don't look at things like, some things is like bad, good or bad. Some things are just are, you know, and then, you know, just like, you know, oh man, that, you know, you're whatever age you're at and you're, you know, you're trying, you know, kind of struggling to make a living. I'm like, yeah, but that's cool. There's a lot of people struggling. It's not bad. It's just, that's life. You go out and you bust your ass and make things happen. You know what I'm saying? You go, that's the great story. No great story ever starts out with someone on top. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I embrace just any challenge at this point. You know, it's supposed to be hard.
So you've mentioned to me on and off the mic, you trying to get a rock kind of band. Get how far into that are you?
Well,
that rock project.
It started out. I don't know if you know who Tommy Vext is. He sang with like Divine Heresy and Snot.
Okay, now I know Snot from, yeah. Snot. Yeah.
So me and him started something a few years back, and then ended up not working out. and then I had all this leftover material, and then like, by happenstance, through another friend of mine, I discovered this singer, this guy named Ravi, who had his solo band called Philotaxis. I think that's how you pronounce it. This guy from Pennsylvania, just really brilliant singer-songwriter. and then basically I just started sending him some of my material, because he was coming from a completely different world. Like, he's into, you know, Pink Floyd and Radiohead, like, total not a metal guy. The material I had was rock, but it definitely had a heavy tinge to it, so I wasn't sure how it would work. So we just started like sending files back and forth, and I go over his house, and we, you know, just jam acoustic or whatever, and then, you know, we kind of started developing things. But during this time, this is when I was still touring with God Forbid, or I was, you know, my living situation is kind of crazy, so it was kind of here and there. But now that I've gotten off the road, I've really wanted to make it a priority to put a real band together. You know, I notice a lot of guys, especially people who have already been in prominent bands, is, you know, now you can do everything on your own. You can program drums, you can compose and make everything. So there's like these studio bands, and then they put a band together to perform the material, and it doesn't, and you can tell that first year on the road, they're not a band. Like, it takes a long time for a band to be a band.
Yeah.
I don't want to skip any steps, and I want to put a band, real band together, and have it be organic and flow, and then capture that in the studio. So, you know, I'm just almost done putting the band together. I have to, got auditions for guitar players tomorrow, and probably going to get a keyboard player too. But I don't know. Like, I'd say sonically, I guess it's, I describe it as kind of like a heavier Muse, music wise.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the singer is kind of Chris Cornell meets Maynard kind of thing.
Wow. Okay.
But so it's
very interesting.
Yeah, it's not really metal. You know, it's not metal. But I purposely don't want it to be that, and I want to be in a situation where, like, you know, I'm dealing with someone who's outside of that realm. So I want to, like, you know, I think when you're dealing with a really talented singer, you know, I'm writing for the singer. You know what I'm saying? What's going to complement his voice the best?
Should I take that part out where you call him a talented singer? Because the last thing you need is a singer with a big ego.
No, that's the funny thing about him. He's actually one of the most humble guys I've ever met. And he's super self-deprecating, and and that's the really cool thing about trying to start a band when you're an adult is you can actually, I guess, vet a lot of these personality quirks and actually say, all right, like, When I started hanging out with them and playing, we would talk just as much as we would jam and just kind of talk about our philosophy and whatever, just about life and stuff. And that was really cool because it's like, all right, not only do we kind of vibe on a musical level, but, like, there's some bigger kind of things happening here. And there's kind of, yeah, that was just a really different experience for me. And I was like, oh, maybe this is kind of how you should do it. I don't know. Not even, to be honest, I don't even know what's gonna happen. I don't know if we're gonna, maybe we'll put out an album, maybe we'll play a couple shows. If we just, like, record something and play a couple shows, I'll totally fine with that. And then put everything into that and make it real and make it honest, and then, you know, and cool. If something else happens, if I get a, you know, Metallica's like, yo, Kirk's leaving, Doc, we need you. You know, then, you know what? I'm like, you know what, guys? For you. You know, because you're cool guys. Your band, haven't heard of you. But, you know, you're doing all right.
You left a nice message on my machine, so, you know.
No, but, you know, I'm open to a lot of opportunities, but this is kind of passion. That's what I want to work on.
That's awesome. Well, Doc, that's a great way to end this episode and start your new project and journey. And plus, we're kind of getting the heave-ho from the sound check of the upcoming band
here. Right on.
But I think I had everything in my head. I never planned this out, but in the back of my head, I had a certain way I wanted to direct this episode.
Did it go there?
We went there off the mic, man.
Oh,
but this just came out of, you know, thin air for me. You with your text yesterday. So, I mean, if you were willing to talk about it, I wanted to. This has been great, man. And you know, this podcast has led me down a path where I've made amends with old enemies. I've met new people, but I don't know if it, well, it's happened a couple of times. No, once with Lydia Chris, who I did a podcast with, who I'd never met, the wife of Peter Chris.
Okay. I thought that was like,
but this is the first time, like, more of a peer level thing that I've met someone for the first time, and this is all through social media. And 95% of my gut instinct was we were gonna hit it off. 5% was like, well, he was in a band. That means 5% of these guys could be nuts. Any, like, who knows, man? So it was a pleasure meeting you, man, and what a great conversation we had.
Hey, let's do it again, man.
Yeah, I think the rest of our crew and band want to get back on the bus.
Hey, man,
thing.
You know what? No, this is my bus now. All right.
Well, there's that 5% coming.
I'm on 4 hours sleep. I might take a nap in this motherfucker.
Well, then let me direct you to the one guy that's been bugging all of us here. You can use his butt. No, I'm just joking. But
you guys are only a three-piece. I know there's some spare bunks in there.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of junk bunks on our bus tours.
I don't know. I'll be junk. It's cool.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot, dude.
No problem, brother. Thank you.
Awesome.